Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Hey.
How are you doing today?
Well, as I said when I came in, I still feel a little hungover from Tuesday.
I hear you.
We went out with Max's dad, who can fucking party. Like, we were out till, like, 2 in the morning, and he's, like, good. And I'm sure he wasn't even hungover yesterday, where Max and I were both struggling.
Practice. He's a pro.
But he's just like, I'm like, how do you do this? Like, he's almost 60 or 60?
I know some older people who can party super hard. Like, party way harder than me.
Like, every time I go out with Brian Ram, I'm like, I'm going to be exhausted the next day.
Yeah, you got to prepare yourself.
Well, and we go to West Hollywood, too. We went to the whiskey. So I'm like,
oh, yeah,
we're going to be out late.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just funny, because, like, with my friends, I'd be like, okay, we'll go out for a few hours, we won't be out too late. And then with him, I'm like, no, I'm at a party.
So we're recording on a Thursday. I think I've legitimately gotten, like, 10 hours of sleep this entire week thus far.
Dang.
So I'm super tired, and I have 2 more overnight shoots this week, so
you look
I'm tired.
Gorgeous, because you're all done up for your self-tape today.
I had a self-tape audition today, so I got up this morning and ate some Captain Crunch and put some makeup on.
I mean, you look stunning.
Thank you so much.
Your makeup, you look just, like, fresh and, like...
Oh,
you don't look tired.
Hides
you look
all my bags.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in the shirt that I slept in. I have no makeup on. I literally brushed my teeth and left the house and put on different pants, and that's
look. We're sweatpants gang.
Yes,
today.
We are.
Yeah,
and big boyfriend t-shirt gang.
Loving it.
So, I have something that's serious, but that's not like super urgently
bad.
Why don't
you kick us off?
Okay, so have you seen the ad by the Sandy Hook Promise on gun safety?
I have, yes.
Okay, so I really wanted to talk about that. So Sandy Hook Promise is a gun safety advocacy group created after the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary, and they put out this ad on Wednesday that is, like, chilling.
It's a back-to-school
ad. It's a back-to-school ad, and it starts out just like any normal back-to-school ad would. They're talking about getting new backpacks and folders for organization, and, like, slowly the testimonies start getting darker and darker. This one kid says, "These new sneakers are just what I needed for the new year," as he's running down the hallway with sounds of, like, screams and gunshots in the background. This girl says, "These new socks, they can be a real lifesaver." And she takes her, like, knee socks off and, like, ties a tourniquet around this girl's leg who's bleeding. And in the final scene, a girl huddles in the bathroom stall and types out a loving text to her mother on a glittery pink phone. Tears stream down her face, and she says, "I finally got my phone to stay in touch with my mom." And then she closes her eyes to the sound of a door opening and footsteps approaching. The co-founder of Sandy Hook Promise is Nicole Hockley, who lost her 6-year-old daughter in Sandy Hook. She says that school shootings and gun violence shouldn't be fun to watch. These ads need to be something that's really important and difficult to watch for us. She says, "The more we step away from reality, the less respect we're giving those who have to live through this. The gun industry is known for its savvy marketing strategies, and it has courted women and children with firearm accessories and cartoons. Hopefully, ads like this can counteract the negative images portrayed by gun advocacy media groups such as the NRA TV." I think it's really important because, like, there is a lot of media out there for the NRA that makes it seem, like, cool. There's pink guns, there's glittery guns, there's, like, kids learning how to handle weapons and all this kind of stuff, where I feel like it's really important for these ads to be out there to counteract a lot of the really harmful images that we see from the NRA.
Yeah, I mean, and not just the NRA. In America, there is such a glorification of gun culture and violence in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of jokes are made about the fact that, like, Americans seem to be so, like, pearl clutchy about sex and things like that in our media. But when it comes to, like, gratuitous violence, we have no issues with that, especially guns. Gun culture is a very serious thing in this country. And, you know, with that being said, again, I've said it on this podcast many times, I'm from the Midwest. I understand that there is a large cultural significance for a lot of people. And part of that is teaching your kids how to handle weapons for whenever you go hunting or, like, whatever.
But it is still important then to show what they did to understand the importance of the weapon that they are wielding.
Right, and to understand that this isn't a toy. I do think that it sends the wrong message whenever there are, like, pink glittery guns or, like, guns that have, you know, characters, cartoon characters on them or whatever, because these are not toys. And I think that confusing, like, a toy with a weapon that can take somebody's life is, one, very dangerous. And then, two, I totally understand her point about needing to counteract those images by seeing the devastation kind of firsthand. I will post this ad on our Instagram for anybody who wants to watch it.
It's amazing.
It is super, super moving. I am so cynical at this point, though, that I'm just like, man, if Sandy Hook didn't get people, or if watching six-year-olds be marched out of their classrooms with their hands on the top of their heads, like, terrified after 20 kids were just gunned down, didn't do it for you, I don't know what kind of ad is going to, like, be effective enough. Yeah.
Have you seen the billboard? It's on Vineland and Burbank Boulevard, and it's like mass shooting insurance.
Oh no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you can get like mass shooting insurance now.
I mean, it was only a matter of time. It's such a, like, and I don't think we can emphasize enough to people who are younger than us how fucking bizarre this is. Like, that this has become such a main part of our culture.
Right, that back to school is back to the anxiety of your kids being at school and not knowing if they're going to be safe.
Right, and like bulletproof backpacks and like, you know, mass shooting insurance and advisory warnings for coming to the United States because of mass shootings. Like, these types of things. It's so bizarre because when we were kids, like, and Columbine happened, it was so out of left field for everybody.
It seemed like a one in a million thing.
It was inconceivable.
Yeah. Yeah, that it would become like a thing.
Yeah. So,
I mean, with where I pick up my kid from school, like, they can't even cross the street to get to the car. They can't walk home from school. They have to, like, a parent or guardian has to come to the classroom door and get their child out of school that way.
It will be interesting, and by interesting I mean probably very sad, whenever we get to the point where we can do studies on what this kind of stress has done to children growing up
in... Oh, it's going to be devastating even just to test it.
Yeah, I mean, and not just mass shootings, but like all of that. I think we're living in a time, even though a lot of studies have been done that our world isn't necessarily, I mean, outside of mass shootings, but like kidnappings, murders, those types of things, our world isn't any less safe or any more safe than it was before.
Right. But mass shootings is a different
thing. Mass shootings is different, but also there's just, I think kids today are also just growing up with so much more anxiety around all of it. Because
I think
the stranger danger, the all of it, because we were given so much more freedom to walk home alone, to like do things by ourselves.
I was talking to T the other day about how I was part of something called the school patrol, and in fifth grade you would walk with like orange vests and orange flags and you would escort kids home from school certain points. Yeah. And then if you were further than those points, you know, either your parent could say they can walk home the rest of the way by themselves, or a parent would meet them there and walk the rest of the way with them. It was for parents with kids who were, you know, younger that were still at home and all these kinds of things. And it made me responsible when I was doing it because I was responsible for these kids. And it also taught, you know, the kids that they can still be independent and be able to do things for themselves within these guidelines of safety. And I think that a lot of the fear and stress has a lot to do with the fact that this generation of parents that are right now are helicopter parents.
Right, and they're helicopter parents because...
For good reason.
I mean, yes and no. Invisibilia, I don't want to go too deep into this, but, like, Invisibilia has a really good episode talking about fear and whether or not our fears are unfounded based on the fact that, like, the helicopter parenting became stronger because of the 24-hour news cycle, where we were constantly being shown things that people weren't talking about before, like, you know, molestation and kidnapping and rape and murder, and, like, we were seeing it all the time, when in reality, I mean, the world is actually slightly more safe now than it ever has been.
Well, because we have more knowledge and information, and there are things like, you know, I look up the sex offender registry in T's area and mine. It's good to have the information, but at the same time, you cannot always protect your child from something bad happening. You can prepare them to a point, have conversations with them, But it's important for children's development for them to be able to go out into the world and make mistakes, to learn from experience, and to have freedom to be able to be kids.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's a really hard line to walk. I don't envy parents having to try and figure out where that line is, because of course all you want to do is keep your kids safe. And right now it's such a scary time. I don't even know what I would do if I had a kid who was in school. I would be terrified. I would be terrified.
Yeah, but it's to the point where parents are scared to even let their kids play in the front yard. Like, yeah. To me that seems... Personally, to me, I'd be like, just go play in the front yard. Check in. Like, with my mom, she'd be like, check in with me every once in a while.
Well, and also,
I'll see you later.
You can do everything right, and it doesn't necessarily protect your kids from harm.
Yeah. So, you're bringing your kids to school, a place where they can be harmed. That's, what else can you do? You know what I mean? Like, you're not, nobody is safe. And I'm sorry to say that.
You can't bubble wrap your kids, and keep them protected all the time.
You just have to do your best and hope that you're one of the lucky ones. I'm sorry, that's all you can hope.
But with all that being said, that means that we need to really take a good hard look at our fucking gun laws. Because
we shouldn't have to go
to have these conversations where we're like, what do we do? I don't know. Can't do anything. Better just hope for the best. You know what I mean? Like, that's bullshit. It's bullshit. And I think that's the point that ad was trying to make.
Exactly.
We have to do something.
And also focus on kids should be excited about their cool new backpack with the characters that they love on it, and their colorful folders, and getting to meet new friends and their teachers. Like, those should be the things that kids are thinking about when they're at school. Not, you know, the kid who's like, my parents got me this cool new skateboard. He throws it through the window so we can get out. You know what I mean? Those are not things that kids should be, like, having to think about what their responses would be in those situations. Yeah. They should be focusing on their education and friendships and becoming good members of society.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Shane Gillis. Have you heard about this?
No.
Okay.
I never know anything.
I don't want to, like, say it like that, like, ooh, like it's like some hot tea or whatever. But, I mean, it is an interesting thing because it's been in the news all this week. And I think there's some interesting things to talk about it. So, SNL just recently hired some new actors.
Right.
To join their cast.
That I did know.
Yes. And we did get the very first full Asian American cast member, Bowen Yang. He is the first full Asian SNL cast member.
Awesome.
He has been a writer on the show for a very long time.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really exciting.
Yeah.
That should be the big news. Everyone, you know, because it's fucking so far, like, long overdue.
Yeah.
That this is happening. So that should be the thing that we're talking about.
But
we're not, because... At the same time that SNL hired the first Asian American cast member, they also hired this guy named Shane Gillis. And Shane Gillis is a stand-up comedian, which is not out of the question for SNL on its face, but it is a little odd because typically the people that SNL hires are...
They're like improv.
Improv actors.
Yeah.
Yeah, sketch comedians, people who are in, like, Upright Citizens Brigade or
Groundlings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he is a stand-up comedian.
Okay.
And he... So it was announced that he was a new cast member, and literally later that day, people were like, what's up with this shit? And they put out a episode of a podcast that he did last year in 2018.
Okay.
Where he was making a lot of very racist remarks. He was using a lot of Asian slurs.
Really?
Talking about Chinatown. Just saying a lot of really derogatory things.
Dude.
Among other things. There were a lot of misogynistic things that he has said as well. And so there was a lot of backlash, of course. And then he came out with a non-apology where he was like, as a comedian...
I'm sorry I got caught.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was like... Honestly, it kind of made me, like, furious because he was like, as a comedian, sometimes things land and sometimes they miss.
Yeah.
That's basically what he said. It was just like, sometimes I'm funny, sometimes I'm not funny. If anybody's actually offended, I'm sorry to you. But, like, but...
There is an interesting line, I feel, with comedy where people will say shocking things, will give shocking opinions. And it's hard for me sometimes because I was talking about the Dave Chappelle stand-up that I watched a few days ago. Where, like, I'm laughing at the delivery, but like, I feel like I can't watch it because there are things that I so strongly disagree with. And I believe truly that it's all about drawing your lines and how seriously you want to take. I think if you're using slurs, if you're being derogatory very explicitly, I think that's 100% wrong. But I feel like in comedy, there is a weird line that comedians draw for themselves and that audience members have to draw for themselves.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's a really hard line to walk, but I think being outright racist and using racial slurs is way over that line.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing. There's a lot of comedians who are coming out of the woodwork and saying, like, you know, what are we supposed to be doing anymore? Like, we can't say anything anymore. And I understand that. And I actually do agree with the idea of, like, as soon as we hear that somebody got something, we have to go and we have to dig in their past and we have to find, you know, something to bring them down. And I think that that part of our culture needs to be scaled back. Like,
well, and because you can make a mistake in the past and be completely
absolutely.
Say, I've learned, I've changed, and
absolutely.
We can accept that. Yeah.
But there are a few things about this. One,
it was last year.
It was last fucking year. Yeah. It wasn't like this happened 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Two, he didn't give an apology for it. I think it would be a different...
Sorry you're offended.
Yeah, it would be a different situation if he had given an apology for it. And three, it was a podcast. It wasn't stand-up. It wasn't some, like, joke that he had, like, worked on and was nuanced and had, like, a worldview that he was trying to get a point across to.
Right.
Because there are comedians
who... He's
giving,
like, an interview.
Whose takes I disagree with.
Yeah.
But... who I can understand, like, this was, like a nuanced take of, like, looking at a certain facet of something that's supposed to make you think, right? That's not what he was doing. It was him and his buddy, basically, like, what we're doing right now, talking about Chinatown and saying really fucked up shit about it. So that's not a joke. And I don't understand why people keep coming and defending it as if... this was, like, him. Rob Schneider came out and was, like, people will never understand how difficult it is to, like, bomb on stage. People trying to, like, give you, like, advice about this or that or criticizing you.
But
and
that's
I'm, like,
different.
He wasn't on stage, first of all. Like, he was, it's a podcast. And it wasn't a joke. It was, like, two people just riffing.
Having a conversation.
Two white guys thinking that they're being fucking funny.
Right.
About something that's not funny. It is offensive. They're sitting in this place of... like, privilege where they can throw around stereotypes as if they are not harmful to a community of color, and they are. And so, like, for all of those reasons, I say fuck you, you know, and I'm not sorry that you did get fired from SNL, because he did recently.
Good.
Because, you know, they just couldn't fucking handle the heat. I think if he had given a different apology, I think...
they could have made it work.
They could have made it work.
Right.
But also, then my question is... SNL, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I had this conversation with Anthony where Anthony was like, I don't think that they knew. But I was like, how did they not know? Because somebody on Twitter found it in like 2 hours. So how did you not know? And as far as
if
I
you're
heard,
hiring someone you need, there is a lot of like checks.
It's
that
a vetting
you do,
process.
Especially for SNL.
Especially for SNL. Yeah. And especially when you know you are making history hiring the first Asian American performer. And then at the same time, you're going to hire...
casting a racist?
Who's racist specifically against Asian American people? Like, you're going to tell me that that wasn't something that you knew?
Yeah.
Like, especially since from everything that I've heard, his stand-up, this is kind of like what he's known for. This is like, quote-unquote, like, irreverency or whatever. But, you know, it's bullshit. And Lorne Michaels came out and said basically, like, well, we just didn't want people to think that we had too much of a left-leaning bias on the show, so we wanted to cast somebody who was more conservative to play on the show.
But and there's conservative and there's
right-wing.
Racist.
Yes, absolutely. Like, this is basically, like, alt-right racist rhetoric. Like, you could have hired someone who was conservative or maybe more moderate or whatever. That's
right.
Fine. It is a TV show that is meant to appeal to a wide audience. But to... what does that say about conservatives or your view of conservatives that you think hiring somebody who is racist, misogynistic is conservative?
Yeah.
Or is right-wing? Like, what does that say? You know, so he's gone. He released a statement where he was like, no one will ever be able to take away from me that, like, I was funny enough to get cast on SNL.
Good for you,
bud. And then was, like, basically, like, I'm more of a Mad TV guy anyway.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Okay, go do Mad TV.
Yeah, bye.
And the thing that bothers me the most about this, sorry, I could rant about this all fucking day, like, because it makes me insane because so many people, even comedians I like, are coming out of the woodwork and being like, you know, you shouldn't just dig into someone's past until you find something and then take their livelihood away. And I'm like, here's the thing. You can say whatever you want as a comedian. You could be a stand-up. There are tons of stand-up comedians who say offensive shit and are successful.
Yeah.
Like, you could have done that. That doesn't give you the right to be on SNL. That doesn't mean that you have the right to any job that you want. Like, freedom of speech isn't freedom from consequences.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you should be allowed to work wherever you want and they don't get to have any say in that. Like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
If he wants to work for himself, let him fucking work for himself.
Exactly.
Like, no one's taking away his right
his
to
career.
Do comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
Oy.
That whole situation happened.
Do you have something positive?
Yes. So, recently, as of last Wednesday, so yesterday for us, 2 days ago for the listeners,
Instagram.
Yes, we're talking about the same thing.
I was going to talk about something else or this. So, yes.
Okay, yes, this is what I have. So, there are new guidelines on Instagram, new community guidelines, and they detail what type of weight loss products and cosmetic procedures can be promoted on Instagram.
For people under 18, right?
For people under 18, mostly. So, the new guidelines say that posts that use certain weight loss products or cosmetic procedures and has an incentive to buy or includes a price will only be shown to users over 18, and content that makes a miraculous claim about certain diet or weight loss products and is linked to a commercial offer, such as a discount code, will no longer be allowed at all.
Yes!
So that is a huge step forward. So it's like fit tees that are basically like, use discount code Chloe at checkout.
And then shit your pants later. Bye.
Yeah, like, so those will no longer be allowed because there is a commercial, like, promotion for sale.
There's so many of those ads.
And they're super, super harmful.
Yeah,
and
so then, many of, like, the Dance Moms girls, like, even as, like, they're still kids, they promoted Fit Chi and stuff like that.
That's so gross.
What the fuck?
And then, in general, just weight loss products or cosmetic procedures, certain ones won't be shown at all to people who are under 18.
That's
so
awesome.
I think that that's super great. Jamila Jamil from The Good Place, who has I Weigh on Instagram, which is great. If you don't follow it, you definitely should be following
it.
She's been a super vocal critic of these weight loss ads. I know she called Khloe Kardashian to the carpet very famously.
Oh, yes.
For promoting...
She's made a funny video about it, too.
Tea or whatever.
Yeah.
And she said in a statement, "This is a huge win for our ongoing fight against the diet/detox industry. Facebook and Instagram taking a stand to protect the physical and mental health of people online sends an important message out to the world. I'm thrilled to have been able to work towards this with them alongside a host of other experts who shed light on the danger of these products." So, yay.
Woo!
That's great.
I love it. So... I quickly wanted to bring this up because we were talking about Bachelor in Paradise before we started.
Indeed.
And they have had their first same-sex engagement ever in Bachelor history.
Demi and Christian.
I share a last name with Christian. I want to know if we're related. hit me up, girl. So I'm wondering how and if this is going to influence the future, because for me it's like you set this whole plot device up. I think it was calculated.
Absolutely.
I think they knew from the beginning she was coming in. They were strong from beginning to end. We knew they were going to get engaged. This was a surefire win. This was a surefire deal. This was
which they knew, yeah, for sure. They wouldn't have brought on a couple where there was going to be a lot of issues, I don't think.
Yeah, and I mean, they created some drama. There was some stuff where, like, I think it was real feelings, but they definitely heightened way more, like, are they going to end their relationship? Like, no, they're not. They're so in love. They're so cute. And I'm wondering now, like, you've set this bar now. You've done this thing. Where are we going to take that? We see this beautiful, so that they get engaged on the beach together. Demi proposes to Christian. She says, yes, it's beautiful. And then on the after the final rose kind of thing, Christian then proposes to Demi, and they both get rings, which some people are like, why do they both have to propose to each other? I just thought it was cute. It was a cute way of getting Demi the ring.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's fine.
And,
that-
and in fact, I'm in some wedding groups, and just this week I read one where a woman had been proposed to by her fiancé, her male fiancé, and they, like, had kind of a proposal that neither one of them were, like, super happy about, but they were very happy to be together. And so she was in there asking for advice because she was going to present him with a ring and propose to him on his birthday.
Haley's fiancé has a ring. And a bunch of people were like, are you married? And they're like, no, but I'm wearing a ring. He wanted a ring, too.
Yeah.
Like,
and
you can both have rings.
So they propose to each other. It's not something that's completely unheard of.
Exactly.
And I feel like you're just manufacturing outrage if you're upset about it.
I totally agree. But I'm wondering, so we had this happy, like, two engagements of this same-sex couple that's so beautiful. And then they're like, our next bachelor, Pete. Like, this white bread.
The most hetero, like, white.
Still lives with his parents.
Yes.
Pilot.
Rich.
Blonde hair, blue-eyed, rich.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so
boring.
Typical. And he's like, unlike any bachelor we've ever had. And
he lives
at a picture.
Close to the mansion. That's literally what they said.
Yeah.
They're like, you're unlike any bachelor we've ever had in that you literally live close to the mansion.
Well, do you remember on when he took Hannah on the plane ride? They're like, there's the mansion. Hi.
It's like, so fucking stupid.
It's so weird because I'm like, Mike Johnson is right there.
Yeah.
Mike Johnson is right there. He was there that night. They should have been like, and he's sitting down here already. Mike, come on up. Like, it infuriates me.
Yeah, but you could have had the first black bachelor.
You could have had your first same-sex engagement and the first black bachelor.
Well,
when are we going to start seeing? I would love to see a gay season of The Bachelor, a lesbian season of The Bachelor. It would be amazing.
This is
a bisexual season of The Bachelor. Sorry, I don't mean to keep cutting you off.
This is the same network that has Sean Spicer on Dancing with the Stars, though. I mean, like, they are always going to ride that line. It's, you know, there's a few things. Like, having the first black bachelorette was a lot safer than having the first black bachelor, because it's very different to have a woman who has, like, a bunch of men contending for her than to have a black man who has a bunch of, like, white women contending for him.
Yeah.
That it's not going to stoke the outrage machine quite as much.
Which
just
is so infuriating.
Just as, like, having two women on The Bachelorette.
Everybody loves Mike.
No, I know. But it's like, they're only going to do so much. They're not going to rock the boat so much. And, you know, historically, we talked about this in our Bachelor episode, The Bachelor is a very heteronormative show.
But then why are you pushing those boundaries if you're not actually going to have any payout for those boundaries? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I think that they'll continue to push them slightly, but I don't think that they're going to push them all that much. You know what I mean? I don't think so. Because, I mean, we had the first black bachelorette, and we haven't had an interracial, like, relationship come out of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, not Paradise, but the other ones, since then.
It's
so
annoying, though.
So it's going to be one of those things where I think we'll see more of it.
Through.
I also don't think we're going to see two men on The Bachelor for quite a long time. Very, very long time.
I would love it. Or, like, what about, like, a bisexual woman? I feel like a bisexual woman would be a safer choice for society than a bisexual man.
Yeah, I wonder if they will do... I think we'll see more of it on Paradise.
Yeah.
I don't think we're actually going to see a bisexual cast of The Bachelor.
It would be so cool.
Or The Bachelorette for a while.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how the drama would unfold and how that would be handled. It would definitely be interesting.
There was a really offensive version of that on MTV back in the reality TV days of MTV, where there was a Tila Tequila.
Yes.
Do you remember? Where she had that, like...
I remember
Tequila. It was very problematic. She made them, like, not she, but the show made all of the people sleep in the same bed. Like, there was like one giant bed.
It's so weird.
It was very,
it's
very
so
weird.
It's so weird. Tila Tequila was an odd one.
It was I mean, I'm not necessarily blaming her, but the way
the
they
show.
Fetishized bisexuality on that show was really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the way that The Bachelor handles masculinity, I don't think that there's going to be, I think they're going to have a really hard time with having same-sex male couples on that show.
Yeah. But to wrap it all up, Mike was right there.
Mike was right there.
Everyone loves him. Everybody wanted him. That was the perfect opportunity.
He's way more interesting than Peter.
Oh my God, Peter is boring. I'm
so
still going to watch it, but I'm like, dude, I don't care.
But I'm happy for Demi and Christian.
Demi and Christian.
I saw her down the street. Here in Sherman Oaks not that long ago.
I would have gotten a picture with her.
I mean, I was driving, but she, so cute. Tiny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Itty-bitty. She looks teeny tiny.
Yeah.
She's... I love her. I love her so much. I want to hang out with them. Did you see the cake that they have, like, an engagement party kind of on the night that the show was airing?
I didn't see it.
And it's like, it said, congrats, Demi and Christian. And then in parentheses on the bottom of the cake, it says, this cake isn't the only thing you'll be eating tonight.
Oh, my God.
And they were just dying. I was like, that is the funniest thing I've ever
seen.
That
is funny.
All right, you guys. Thank you so much for listening to another mini episode. If you have any comments on this episode, if there's anything you want us to talk about, if you want to send in sister solidarity stories, anything like that, go ahead and email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can also follow us and DM us on Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. We use Twitter sometimes. Go ahead and follow us there at YANF Podcast.
YANF
Podcast. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can like and review us on our business page. We enjoy that very much. And we really, really love it when you leave us reviews on Apple Podcast. Come on, guys. It's been months. Do it.
I think there's something wrong with Apple Podcasts, though. In
really,
our
it's
listeners,
not us.
In our listeners' defense. I think that there is something wrong with it.
Okay. I'll buy it.
Because my other podcast has been having issues, too. And I'll get emails that are like, you have reviews. And I'm like, where?
So where are they?
I think there is an issue with Apple Podcasts.
Okay, well...
But anyway, do it anyway.
I mean, just do it, please. We really appreciate it. It helps us a whole lot. And it also really helps us when you listen to us on Radio Public. I was looking at the listens. Not many of you listen there. I know you hear us every week, and I'm not trying to pressure you. But
you are, I think, a little.
I mean, I'm not trying to be obvious about it, Keegan. I don't want to seem too pushy, but it does help us out a lot. It's a good place for you to listen to us and for us to get a little bit in return, and we appreciate it. That is all we have for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on.